Welcome to Restart Radio. I'm Dave Pickering and I make a monthly podcast for the Restart Project. The Restart Project is a London-based charity and social enterprise whose mission is to spark reflection and change in our relationship with gadgets. The repair and reuse ecosystem is intricate and supported by people who truly care about their community and the planet. And a great example of this is in Brighton. So for this month's episode of the Restart Project podcast, we spoke to just two of the organisations and projects working towards reducing waste in the city and securing a better future for us all. First, I'll speak to Victoria and Sam, organisers of one of the longest-running repair cafes in the UK. Then we'll hear David from Tech Takeback, who tells us about what it's like to follow the process of reuse from discarded objects to a second life.
Hi all, my name's Sam Jarman and I am a director of Brighton Repair Cafe. I co-organise Brighton Repair Cafe with Victoria Jackson. My main role is to host and organise around events and to promote beyond the events.
Hi, I'm Victoria Jackson. I am co-director of the Brighton Repair Cafe alongside Sam. We host the events and organise the event and try and promote repair beyond our localised events and help other groups set up. And the aim is to try and get a repair cafe in every neighbourhood across Brighton and Hove.
Great to have you both on the show. When Brighton Repair Cafe began, it was one of only three repair cafes in the UK. What inspired you to start it?
I was at the time studying for a master's in sustainable design at Brighton Uni, and one of my co-students saw an article in the New York Times about the Dutch repair cafes. And she said, oh, why don't we just set one up in Brighton? As we were students and we had lots of energy and spare time and we were enthusiastic about sustainability and reuse, I just said, yeah, let's do it. And we just approached a local cafe and said, can we come and hold a repair session there? And it kind of built from there. 10.5 years later, we're still going somehow.
Wow. Have you seen things sort of change within those 10 years?
Yeah, I think it's really apparent that repair is now on the agenda. It's been popularised through shows like The Repair Shop, but it really was. I mean, every time we mentioned it, we really had to explain it quite thoroughly at the beginning, didn't we, Victoria?
And we were sort of coming at it as designers, weren't we, Sam? So we kind of were interested in the design of the products and why they were breaking and how people have these relationships with their objects that can change as they age and then how you can kind of reconnect them with their objects through repairing. And so we were trying to explain that to a lot of people in the design field that we were running these repair cafes as part of our creative practice. And they were just like, what?
There was an assumption that it's not related to design at that point. And that still is the case, I think. It's changing, but there's still a lot of persuasion that needs to happen in that direction. So encouraging design around objects that are repairable.
Yeah, I think there's still some perceptions around it being quite an alternative, on the periphery, community, grassroots sort of activity. When actually, when you see from the local events where the data goes and how that goes towards a kind of a bigger understanding of product obsolescence and using to campaigning to change policy, you really start to understand it's part of this huge system and it's not just this random activity that happens once a month in a neighbourhood around your corner. It actually has a really big ripple effect.
Yeah, I mean, you'd think, you know, on paper at least, like Brighton would be the perfect place to embrace something like what you're doing. Have you had a good response from the local kind of communities when you've been doing your work?
Just to add to what Victoria's saying about the ripple effect, there's something that's happened with Brighton Repair Cafe where it's almost self-perpetuating because people are so interested in it and one event informs the next. Initially, we were in one location for quite a long time and we're more inclined these days to pop up so that there is a variety in the locations that we hold the events, which means that the demographic changes and we are reaching a wider audience. But it's always been received with optimism, I think, and openness, being in Brighton particularly.
It is really part of a bigger network of people who are trying to do things around reuse, reducing waste. We've got a big kind of Frugal network here. We've got the Revalue It gang. We've got lots of pockets of things happening. And actually those isolated activities and organisations are really trying to start to come together and work together and find ways to kind of push the agenda forward further.
So recently we were part of Circular Saturdays, which was an initiative set up by Brighton and Hove Council through Interreg funding that they received. And we were invited to do a series of events alongside Tech Takeback. And this was one of many where they're trying to get a sense of how those groups could potentially work together.
And the different skills they're offering. It was really great because it was very central in Brighton where these activities were happening. And there was a great support from the council who were promoting it. It was great for reaching new audiences because over the last 10 years, we've had quite a few groups come to us and say, oh, how do we set up a repair cafe? And they're mostly from neighbourhoods out of the centre of Brighton. So it's still not as visible as it could be that all these activities are going on. So we were hosted via the Revalue It space in central Brighton, which was on the high street. People were walking past who didn't know about the event and popped their heads in and were really interested in what we were doing. Only relatively recently that we've worked with the council with these Circular Saturdays. We have had meetings over the last 10 years with council, but even relatively recently, I said to someone who I know who's a Green councillor, this is what they're doing in Wales, Repair Cafe Wales, government supporting them. Local authorities don't necessarily know what's happening in other areas, but these other organisations can be really good models to be mimicked. There's still, I think, a lot more happening on a local grassroots level than in an institutional level.
There's a lack of consistency. So we have been very fortunate to get funding from Brighton Hove Council over the years, but obviously that dries up and then we find ourselves kind of scrabbling around a bit. Obviously, we keep going, but we need consistent support, as do other groups in Brighton.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, isn't it? So often it's like an extra bit. They'll give you funding when you apply for it, but it's not like baked into the root of what they do.
It almost always has to be sort of a new project rather than sustaining existing projects, which actually, if something's really established and it's doing some good work, then why not give it some fun to keep going?
It's a really good point. And the Circular Saturdays is a good example of that, where it worked so well with the Tech Takeback team. There was a lovely symbiosis that happened on those Saturdays where people could come, and if they couldn't fix their object, they could take it to Tech Takeback. And they would find the best possible way of either recycling or passing on or fixing themselves if we can do it. But yes, it'd be great to continue that dialogue and those events. And that's something that we're keen to do, but it's not happening yet.
Yeah, so I mean, you've spoken a little bit about how you're connecting with other groups and organisations in Brighton, but where does a repair cafe like yours fit within the wider ecosystem of repair and reuse?
Victoria and I are part of the Community Repair Network, which was set up during COVID period. And it evolved quite slowly, actually, in some ways, because there were a lot of voices to come together and to make sure that we're all coming from the same place or end up in the same place, as it were, to form this group. So that's been going for about a year and a half. Initially, it started with 12 different groups from across the UK, Wales, Ireland, Scotland. And it felt really important to be part of that as a group, to have an understanding of how a small grassroots organisation could actually come together to form a larger group to create impact.
Yeah, it was really inspiring, wasn't it? And within the more localised context, there are groups who are trying to get people to share, Frugal people, reducing waste by passing on things they don't want anymore to others. The Green Centre, who are taking things that won't be recycled by the council and making sure that those materials get reclaimed. There's Tech Takeback, who are getting all the electrical goods and getting all the resources out of them that they can or putting them back into use. And I guess our place in that is to help people to elongate the lives of their objects. A really big part of that is also shifting mindsets and kind of the educational transformational process that happens when people get to repair things themselves with some help from someone who knows what they're doing, because that gives people confidence to think about their products in a different way and think about the objects they own and think, actually, it's possible for me to keep this in use and not just to have to discard and replace it.
How has that helped you to develop, and what have you learned from the other members?
We all came at it with slightly different ideas, but managed to create a website that collectively had an understanding of what a repair cafe is, how you can set one up. That took time, but we built some very strong relationships in the process. And now we're collectively working on the 10-year tech campaign. So it's just growing and feels like a really, really strong support network.
Yeah, I think for me, it was really interesting because we had originally taken the model of the repair cafe from the Dutch model, and to see the different structures, seeing some were becoming these kind of permanent spaces like share and repair bar, some had like huge amounts of support from the government councils and things, and sort of seeing the scales at which people were working. It was really inspiring, and it was kind of reassuring to know that there's all these people actively doing things all around the country, and we hadn't been connected before, but actually there is this huge network and it's just growing all the time.
What needs to be done to help people to keep more things in use for longer?
Instead of us being puritanical about it and trying to promote through wagging finger, it's much better if people can come along to the repair cafe and experience the fixing themselves, demystifying the object, understanding how they can fix it with the support of somebody else. They're less likely to throw things away as a result of that because they understand how empowering that is. So as soon as someone experiences that opportunity, we don't have to do too much work in that respect because they understand how good they feel when they fix that object with the support of somebody else. They also understand how important those communities are. They're not just coming to fix the object, they're coming to meet new people from a variety of backgrounds. And that's something that you don't necessarily anticipate, those connections.
That's something we've really tried to hold in our repair cafes, is creating events that are kind of informal, fun. They're social as much as they are learning experiences. It doesn't feel like a chore. It feels like a joy to fix. You know, we all have such busy lives. It's so convenient to go to a shop up the road or click on Amazon and replace something. So to get people repairing, it needs to be sort of aspirational, desirable, fun, something you really enjoy doing.
And do you see, from your kind of vantage point of doing the repair cafes, do you see like obstacles that are put in the way of people from repair?
It's quite a privilege to have time these days. And that's something that we're noticing. If it's easier and cheaper in some ways to go out and buy something rather than to fix it, that's a massive barrier. I suppose it's just making people more aware through the process so that they really understand the impact that they're having as individuals just by fixing that the toaster rather than buying a new one.
Within the events, there's a time factor as well, isn't there? Because sometimes things come in that just will take a really long time. We've actually had to put a hold on fixing sewing machines because there is a very long and specialist repair. We usually refer them on to a local repairer who's really good and runs a business fixing sewing machines. There are other barriers, the kind of classic cheaply made kettle or toaster that's been fused together so you can't get through the plastic, or hair dryers seem to be particularly difficult to get into. And then with certain devices, especially electronic, they're kind of built to not be opened without completely destroying what's inside. Skills as well. You know, we have an amazing team. We wouldn't be able to run the events without the skills of our repair team, who are really enthusiastic, really knowledgeable. They bring along their tools and their enthusiasm every month. But they're kind of a rare breed as well.
They're also volunteers, aren't they? So that's a barrier in itself because there's only so much time. You know, ideally, it would be amazing to run it daily. And I think that, you know, with support from local government in Wales, that happens.
But what we're seeing also, I think, in Brighton is we've got Tech Take Back, who've got a permanent space and are open every day. We've also got the new Brighton Community Workshop, which is set up and is going to hopefully start doing repairs as well as kind of maker workshops. And they have a tool library there. We're starting to see these community projects become established spaces and have big enough teams or enough funding to be open nearly every day. So people can go in and rely on the fact they can go along and get the information they need or the tool they need or the support as and when they need it, rather than the difficulty with the repair cafes once a month.
And on a positive, actually, because we've helped support and set up several around Brighton and Hove, potentially someone can go to one every weekend, and we share volunteers as well.
Where would you like to see repair in 10 years from now?
From my perspective, I've been working with a student-led repair group in a university. And I can imagine that every university having their own student-led repair group, because they are obviously the future generation of workers and designers and citizens. I can imagine that having a massive knock-on effect just through how that grows exponentially.
Yeah, I would add to that, I would like to see it in schools as well. Something Sam and I have talked about, we could set up repair clubs in schools where you're just starting to get those hand skills back into the schools, which have been removed through lots of the education being cut in the creative arts and design technology, etc. If you start kids feeling like it's normal to fix their things or knowing how to sew a button on, then they're going to take that with them. That's one of our challenges, is lost skills. A lot of our volunteers are slightly older. We need to get those skills back into people's hands.
Intergenerational fixing is the way forward, because obviously we're missing a trick if we don't build those stronger relationships between those youngsters with tech skills and the older generation with a more hands-on practical skills: woodwork, bicycle mending, sewing, darning, knitting. It's quite interesting to see the impact of the lack of those things in schools at the moment, because as much as I can see students are really, really keen to get involved with repair, things like using a sewing machine are not first nature as they used to be.
Yeah, and I think the big vision is that repair is normalised again, because it used to be, I remember my granddad fixing everything. He had tins of different like screws and nuts and bolts, and he knew how to fix everything. And my dad as well, and my mum was also very good at sewing, and I'm still a learner. I haven't got the skills that they had, and we're in this. Sam and I are always learning, and that's probably what keeps us going, because we love to learn. We're always hoping to kind of get better at repairing ourselves.
Also learning from the Global South, we were really fortunate to see Matthew Labari's talk at FixFest from Rhino Refugee Camp Repair Cafe. And he has since done a talk at the university that I work at. And it is really apparent how much we can learn from his entrepreneurial skills, his enterprise skills, what he's managed to do in a very short space of time out of necessity. Having that opportunity to learn from people across the world as well, and that connectivity, I can imagine that being something within 10 years that becomes much more inherent.
One of the amazing things about Matthew's talk was some of the degenderizing of the repair that he's working on, and getting women in the repair of computers and demystifying. And actually, as I was just talking about my granddad and my dad having all these repair skills, I was thinking, oh yeah, that was very genderized. You know, the men were in the garage and the women were sewing. And actually, it's something Sam and I have also talked about, is how you create the opportunities for anyone to repair anything and feel comfortable learning and taking part.
For 10 years, we've wanted to become more adept at learning how to fix electricals and electronic goods. We never seem to have the time. Maybe that's something else that we'd like to see happen in 10 years. Is that those involved in repair do actually get opportunities to fix their own objects.
That sounds like a great future. And anybody that is interested in hearing more about what Matthew has done, they can listen to his episode of The Restart Project. That was maybe one of my favourite interviews we've done. So, what's your top tip for someone looking to start a repair cafe?
I suppose it's about listening to the individuals within the group. The group of volunteers that we have, there's a lovely like-mindedness, and people are very, very supportive of each other. And we've stuck together for 10 years now. And I think that's through, it's a trusting space, and there's a mutual respect there for what we're doing and for what each individual does. So it's quite egalitarian.
Yeah. I think maybe I'd add also that we try and celebrate every year, have a celebration where we come together and celebrate what we've achieved over the year and have a little kind of party for the volunteers.
A really good tip, I reckon. Repair can be a party. The Restart Project call our repair events Restart Parties. We have to make sure that we celebrate, take stock, like look back at what we've done, as well as look forward at what we want to do. And that's such an important thing of making things sustainable and giving momentum and just making a community. And so do either of you have anything that you'd like to like emphasize?
I think I'd really like just to mention that working with Restart has been really important for us. Our journey's been quite similar in that Restart started 10 years ago as well. And we haven't felt like we've been on our own. And again, more recently, students that Victoria and I have been working with on a project called Repairable by Design, we were able to work with Restart analysing data as a project that was part of their data bench, like a micro task. And that has fueled the student-led repair cafe.
That was a great project, wasn't it? Because students came and saw what we did at Brighton Repair Cafe and how we gather our data. And then working with Restart to see how to analyse the data and to use that data to then create campaigns. So they got this really lovely sense of the full journey from grassroots community local events up to policy campaign level using the data for the big picture. It was a brilliant project. And as Sam said, it's now fueled that group of students to go on and establish this new repair cafe.
Sam and Victoria and their mission to end waste are the perfect guests to represent the community repair side of Brighton's ecosystem. But we also wanted to hear from an organisation that focuses more specifically on the reuse side, giving things a second life. Victoria and Sam already mentioned Tech Takeback as another big player and collaborator with the Restart project. So for the final section of this podcast, here's David to fill us in on what that organisation does.
Hello, I'm David Greenfield. I'm the Managing Director of Tech Takeback, a not-for-profit company that collects end-of-life electricals from residents using an on-demand app, the first collection service of its kind in the UK, possibly Europe, possibly the world. We collect electricals for data erasure, refurbishment, reuse, repair, and then as a last resort, recycling. We started in 2016 as a pop-up in Brighton and Hove, and the founders had a background in data erasure, local government specialism, and also were founders of Freegal. So we come to this from a community, a government, and a specialist perspective.
What kind of state are most devices in when you receive them?
We have two options for bringing devices in. The doorstep collection, a lot of people clearing out electrical items that they've had for a very long time. So we get 20-year-old laptops, we get 10-year-old audio separates, we get dead toasters, and we do what we can to try and get as many of those into their next life. We've been doing doorstep collections now for over 2 years and have collected over 100,000 items. And we've got about 25,000 of those items into another life.
And what is the most common device that gets donated to you?
Oh, the most things that we've had in the last 2 years have been audio items. Now, that includes hi-fis. That does also include CDs. So we've got a number of CDs rather than CD players. We've had 7,500 audio items collected, over 11,000 data storage devices, 3,500 phones. By weight, we've collected over 8 tons of audio, TV and home equipment and 8 tons of PCs.
What do you do with all of these electricals and how do you decide which ones to sell in the shop?
The process we have is firstly focused on data security. So we set up this service to allow residents to give us their end-of-life computers, tablets, mobile phones, anything with data on in a safe and secure way. So when we go to somebody's home and pick up the tech, we label it with a unique barcode that links their tech to them electronically. And that's why we know we've collected over 100,000 items, because every single one has been uniquely identified. We then separate it into data-bearing and non-data-bearing items. So a data-bearing item, as I said, might be a laptop or a PC or a mobile phone. They go for data erasure, and we have a zero tolerance on data erasure. If we can't do it, we actually take the hard drive out and then try and reuse the rest of it. If it passes, it gets a certificate to say it's passed and is then able to go into the triage process, which we do for everything that is non-data bearing as well. And that triage process is essentially, can we reuse it without doing anything? Can we reuse it with a bit of repair? Can we reuse it as parts? And if we can't do any of those, can we disassemble it to get all of the items that we want sent off for recycling? It is a labour-heavy process, but we're doing this because we want to ensure that the materials have a second, third, fourth, or even fifth life, depending on what they are. We've created a high street shop, which is a gift economy shop where every single item has been electrical safety tested and function tested, and then is offered for sale to enable us to recover some of the costs of the processing and support the digital inclusion and other charities we work with. So you can go and buy a refurbished PC, laptop, audio equipment. You can get lamps, you can get toasters, you can get games. We're working with Brighton Hove City Council to take up one of the high street shops that has been closed for a number of years. So that's outlet number one. Outlet number two is we have an eBay page where we put the curious, weird and wonderful and higher value items on, and include some very nice Apple Mac laptops that we've had from one business, because we do business collections as well. But also, probably I think my favourite thing that we've ever put on eBay was a wooden, looked like a bicycle lamp made by Eveready. And it turned out to be a light from the First World War. And it was an officer's trench light. At the moment, we've got, for example, a vintage Sony tape recorder. We've got a lucky karaoke mixer. We've got a vintage telescene adapter, which I think is for slides. We've even got Super Nintendo games. That's outlet number two. Our primary outlet that we try to aim for is local charities, where we get devices up to essentially as new status, a working status with the latest software, and they're used for digital inclusion. And then we've got a fourth outlet. Once we've had something in the shop for quite a while and it hasn't sold, we then pass it to Freegal, which is an online freely giving, freely taking site. If we can't sell it or reuse it, we then disassemble these items, mainly the laptops, but quite a lot of the others, for all of the parts. So we're fundamentally focused on achieving a circular economy, and we do that by trying to get as much value, both social and economic and environmental, out of all of the stuff that we collect.
And what have you learned while running the Revaluate shop?
There's a huge number of people that need a shop like this. We've also learned that there's also a whole load of tat out there, which should never be put on sale anyway. And that actually people are coming to buy good quality secondhand items from us, because quite a lot of the stuff that they buy from some of the retailers doesn't last. We've also learned that it's a community of people that are really quite keen on essentially the secondhand vibe. But also that's led us to introduce other services. So in Brighton, we have the first outside of London Library of Things, run by the Library of Things organisation. That allows residents to have the choice when they come into the shop of either renting a high value, low use item, such as a power drill, or buying one from us if they need it more regularly. Or there's actually a community library up the road which you can lend as well. So we're trying to offer consumers as many options as possible and highlight some of the consumption methods that are actually doing the best for the planet. So why own something if you're only going to use it twice a year? Why not borrow it and then let other people use that same device, meaning you don't have to have 200 drills sitting in people's drawers forever doing nothing, and you have one decent quality drill that's being used by 200 people.
Absolutely, yeah. There's so many things that you just use very rarely, and linking people together to do that is a great thing to do. I mean, has anything changed in the way that you run the shop since you started it?
I think in terms of the concept of the shop, the concept hasn't changed, but the presentation of the shop has probably changed to reflect a more consumer-facing approach. We do want to give people a service and make secondhand electricals something where people go, yeah, I want to go and buy that.
Are some of the sales that you do sales through a pay what you can model? Have I got that right?
We're calling it a gift economy. We did start off on the pay what you want, but then we had a lot of people coming in going, well, that's 150 quid. I'll give you £2. We flipped it into the gift economy to say, please, if you can, pay the guide price. If you can't, then absolutely give us an offer and then we can discuss. a small proportion of the customers use that option. And we've had a few that have paid more, which is lovely. I think on the whole, customers quite like to see a price. We price on the generous side in terms of making sure it's affordable.
Is there an opportunity to reuse everything that you collect, or is that a little bit unrealistic? And is there financial value in components or products that can't be reused?
Not everything's reusable, simple statement. We've just spent the last year working with the Restart Projects and with University College London on the Revalue Repair Programme. We've come up with a multi-criteria assessment tool to determine when something should be repaired and when it should be scrapped. We focused on mobile phones, vacuum cleaners, and laptops. And the multi-criteria assessment picks up our experience of what we've been doing through our system and the work of the Fixing Factory in London and the work at the West London Waste Authority Household Waste Site. We've got a much more nuanced and articulated determination, condition, build quality, to be able to determine whether or not we should even attempt to repair it. And that will mean that we actually do not repair a number of items that could be repaired because the market for resale is not there, or the time and energy and cost of parts to repair it would mean that you'd be making a loss. Unfortunately, we're in a world where the number of items that people give away, if we determine that something is not repairable, there'll be something literally coming along the next minute that might well be, and that's better value and is worth doing. So unfortunately, we're in a position where, much as we might want to repair everything we can, unless we get significant more funding, we just can't financially and environmentally also repair it. There's probably one other element which has come out of the research that we've done with the Restart Projects on this, which is that if you go to a repair cafe or to a restart party, you're taking a device that you want to repair because you want to keep it. And therefore, there is essentially an element of ownership about wanting to keep hold of that, and therefore it's worth doing. We've had people come in with a radio that was bound up in gaffer tape and that had a broken glass and everything like that. We had one virtually the same in the shop for sale, and it was 10 quid or something. And the lady said, no, I want this. I want to keep it going. And so we helped her repair it. Equally, somebody else will see that one bound in gaffer tape and go, yeah, we don't want that. We'll have the one for a tenner. And then we've got to determine whether or not that one in the gaffer tape should be repaired. And we would probably go, no, because if it's only worth a tenner in the shop, it's going to cost more than that just to repair it. So it's a really delicate and interesting balance. And if we were talking about items of which there are a few, it would be a much, much easier discussion. But we're talking about waste electricals, which globally are projected to be 70 million tons in the next 4 years. Now, 70 million tons of small electrical items is absolutely insanely massive number of items. We've collected around 100,000 items in the last 2 years, and that equates to about 80 tons. So we're talking trillions of items of waste that are going to be around, and you can only sensibly repair those that are going to be reused, because actually you're then expending more energy, both electricity and time, on something that's never going to be reused.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. What can the government do to support reuse more?
Well, I think there's a couple of things. One of which is look at the VAT rates for reused items. I think we also need the government to start thinking about the metrics for reuse. Everything at the moment is focused on recycling. Recycling is good. However, if we look at things from a circular economy perspective, recycling is the least good of the circular economy. Because above recycling, we should be having refurbishment. We should be having repair. We should be having remanufacture, we should be having reuse, and we should be having prevention. We shouldn't be having these things in the first aid. So the government's 2018 National Waste Strategy highlights circular economy as where they want to go. 5 years on from there, we're still waiting for legislation to support deposit return schemes and extended producer responsibility. And many of those bits of legislation are going to miss the electricals side completely, focusing more on packaging. We need the government to start taking a much broader critical materials approach to this. The key reason why we set up Tech Take Back was because we saw the electrical waste stream as being one of the highest and fastest growing waste streams in the world. And the amount of materials that are contained within electrical waste stream is insane. The laptop that we're recording this on will have gold, it will have palladium, it will have tantalum, which is a conflict material that's mostly taken from Rwanda and Democratic Republic of Congo. You've got a vast store of raw materials that are currently not being utilized to their full potential. And in many cases, from a householder point of view, they either stay in their drawer or cupboard at home and never get reused, or they go straight to the household waste site where they get recycled. Essentially, when you recycle electrical at your household waste site, it will go into a blender and some of those materials then be captured for recycling. You've lost the potential for reuse at that point. So we set up Tech Take Back to try and do what's right for the equipment and support those people that needed equipment. And we feel that actually the collection system we've put in place, which is an app-based version, and the shop are the way that we should be treating electricals. We should be collecting them for reuse and helping those that need it. And as a last resort, we should be recycling.
I think it's clear from these interviews that the grassroots repair and reuse ecosystem in Brighton is stronger now than it's ever been. And seeing our allies collaborating in this mission to reduce waste is so inspiring. What they need now, and what we all need, is support from local and national governments to fund this essential and future thinking work, and put the policies in place that mean reuse and repair are prioritised over recycling. Not because the passion to keep it going isn't there, but because to truly tackle this issue and to have a repair hub in every town, it has to be supported at scale. Restart Radio is a show aired on Resonance 104.4 FM and a monthly podcast uploaded to the Restart Project website and found wherever you get your podcasts. As with all episodes of Restart Radio, we'll include links with background information to all of the issues and stories discussed over at therestartproject.org, where we've also set up a fundraiser. So if you've enjoyed this episode, do make sure that you donate there to help to fund the future of the podcast. The music that you've heard in today's episode was made with lasers and repurposed electronics and is a collaboration between Opto Noise and Cassini Sound. And big thanks to Restart's communications producer, Holly, who does the research and the planning for the podcast. And now it's time to pack up the equipment and say goodbye to each other. Goodbye, everybody.